With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air. The premier HVAC company in the Midlands is growing. Are you a top HVAC technician? AAA Heating and Air is looking for dedicated applicants to fill their fast-growing service department with top-notch HVAC technicians. If you're the best, then they want you. If you're ready to stop working and start a career, you can earn up to $100,000 plus a year at AAA Heating and Air. Quality candidates will have at least 2 years' experience and a good driving record. Benefits include top industry salaries, commission on service and unit sales, set call limits, company-provided take-home vehicle and gas card, company-provided cell phone and tablet, health, dental, and vision benefits, 401k retirement plan with company match, and scaled PTO based on length of service. Contact Roy and Dana Finley at 803-677-1500 or check out their job postings on Facebook or ZipRecruiter.
AAA Air, when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
Here.
Okay. We are set to be joined by Monkel Goodwine here in a little bit. Obviously, one of the newer additions to the team, transferring over from Alabama at the end of the year, and on Saturday night went out there and made his presence known. And look, there's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of guys to pay attention to, but by the end of the game, you were very familiar with 44 on the defensive line for the performance he had.
It actually took me a second. I'm glad you said it like that, Tyler, because I had to train my brain, like, all right, who's 44? And, that's a good one.
Gerald Dixon. Remember 44 Dixon?
44 Dixon. He was the defensive end Dixon, right?
Yes, that's correct. 92 Dixon was 92. The other Dixon.
I believe and Maurice and Brown, he's 44 on offense. He's 44 on offense. Got a couple 44s at the end of the game.
Maurice Brown the second?
Yeah. The second, sorry. Got to give him the full name there.
I don't think Monkel has a junior or a second or third in there. Although,
Ask him.
Sounds like Monkel Goodwine the third would make a lot of sense, but.
That's it. That's like country club. Just a country club name.
Just a regular name. But no, he and DeAndre Jules out there, man. I feel like they. I know they didn't, but I feel like if we did a snap count for the game, it seems like they were out there a lot. But they were out there late, and they were out there a lot actually, and made some things happen.
So I went back and watched it last night, and it seemed like he and Jules rotated in, at least in the first half, in that second rotation of guys on the defensive line. Because, again, there's so many bodies in that room right now. There's a lot of guys to get out there on the field. But, yeah, they were literally out there until the very end of the game on Saturday night.
Yeah, I thought we talked all spring about the depth on the defensive line, the depth at linebacker, and that was something we had heard. But again, this is not Steve Spurrier era where you're just out there at every practice. So that was something I was curious to see with my own eyes out there. And I thought it was sort of as advertised. I think Goodwine's probably been better than advertised maybe. I came in, I would say, just like with a blank slate for him. You know, I was like, he hadn't really played at Alabama. Let's see what it looks like. And when I went back over the game in my head and just sort of rewatching the TV copy of it, he looks the part is something that I just kept saying about so many guys. And I was like, man, I'm about to overuse that phrase. I need to figure out a different way to say it. But so many guys on that defensive front look the part at this point. And so, you know, I think for South Carolina, they've felt pretty good about that front six for a while now, kind of going back a few months ago. But I'm sure to see it kind of play out the way it did was a positive there internally. And, you know, I don't know what direction we want to take the convo now, y'all, but I also came in with questions about that opposite of OD Fortune corner spot, and I don't want to get too caught up in spring ball, but I kind of feel like my questions have gone away a little bit. Like, that to me is just not that huge of a concern as it maybe once was.
Well, and from reading what you guys have wrote from your times going up there, Judge Collier is in the lead as of right now, was dealing with some injuries on Saturday night, so didn't get to see him. Vicari Swain went out there, and took advantage of all those extra reps, made the most of his opportunity. So regardless of which guy it comes down to, you know you're going to have a viable option, whoever that is, ending up at that opposite corner spot.
Yeah, the athleticism is certainly there. And we talked about this a lot in the offseason. You know, it's not this season like it was so many times in the past where you either knew who your starters were or, you know, think back to 2022, right? Marcellus Dial had actually, or 2023 rather, Marcellus Dial was going to go ahead and step up, you know, after Cam Smith and Darius Rush moved on to the NFL. You had Marcellus Dial step up to be, you know, the lead guy. Now he's going to go to the NFL. The interesting thing about Dial is that 2022 season when they had Dial and Cam Smith and Darius Rush, Dial actually played the most snaps out of any of those guys, but he was kind of thought of as your third corner. Mm-hmm. Well, he was able to just step right in, and then you had OD taking a step forward. He had played a lot. This year a little bit different because OD's your known commodity. Kind of know what you're getting from him. And you hope he, you know, takes a final step forward in his last season. What you have across from him, you know, not quite as proven commodities, but then, man, you look at, like, the skill sets, the body types, former highly rated guys, you know, Emory Floyd, Vakari Swain, we've seen what they can do. And then we've got a taste of Judge Collier from his time last season. And like you said, Tyler, he's kind of in the lead. You got Jalewis Solomon, another four-star guy coming this summer. So not lacking for talent at DB, just a little bit more of a question of experience at that other spot.
Yeah, and I think, like y'all said, you still maybe give the edge to Judge Collier, but I'm intrigued by that battle even moving forward. But it's more, I mean, y'all remember a couple positions last year where we were waiting on guys to step up, and it was more there's still a battle because you're waiting on guys to step up. I feel like cornerback has been a little bit of the opposite. Like, we've heard good returns on multiple guys there. So I think they'll keep battling it out. I thought it was fascinating. We know Collier has the experience over the other guys. But then Clayton White, in his final press conference of the spring, mentioned Emory Floyd as the guy who's maybe made the biggest jump this offseason. But then, I don't know if y'all caught this on the TV copy, but I think it was Stitchcomb said that when he was talking about Vakari Swain, he said, yeah, that's one of the guys Clayton White said people, you know, they always ask coaches that thing. Like, who's a guy that outsiders don't really know their name yet, but we need to know their name. He said, paraphrasing, of course, that Swain was one of the guys Clayton White had mentioned that, hey, people might need to know this guy's name. And then Stitchcomb is just kind of almost laughing to himself. He's like, yeah, that's a good-looking kid right there, 6'1", 188 pounds. And I think you look at him and, like, I think I'm completely bought in. Like, I think we were all high on Swain's potential. We thought he'd maybe play more last year. And then you sort of go, all right, well, he didn't play as much as those other guys. Do I need to reset my expectations? Is there something I'm missing here? And I think the transition from being a safety receiver special teams in high school to playing true corner in college was a little bit of an adjustment. However, just looking at him, the way he carried himself on Saturday, the confidence, the swagger, combined with the athleticism, I think you got to find a role for this guy. Like, if for whatever reason it's, hey, Collier and Emory are ahead and you got Jalewis Solomon coming in, then make the move to receiver now, honestly, or he's going to be your guy opposite OD at corner. Like, I think his traits are that special that you're going to find a role for that guy.
You can't go through this season and look back and say, man, we didn't use Vakari Swain enough. You know, whatever that means. I think, actually, Wes, from what we've heard, there's a little bit of that thought even from last season when he was a freshman of, man, maybe we should have carved out a little bit more of a role for that guy. And so you make a good point. You know, South Carolina in their defensive scheme and in 2024, this modern era of college football, you're going to play a decent amount of nickel, right? Now, we know, you know, really, those guys are more corners. Now, you can play matchups. You can put a corner at nickel. We've seen them do, Torian Gray and Clayton White, do that. But you're not going to play four corners, you know, at the same time in a game. You can rotate a little bit, but generally you want to have two guys and a nickel, and, you know, maybe you rotate a little bit. You play matchups a little bit. The point is there's not enough snaps to go around, but you feel pretty good about all those guys. Swain is the one that has the ability to be a return man for you. We saw that the other night. He was the first guy up there, at least for his team, on punt return. And he's got, like you said, Wes, the receiver background as well. He's dangerous with the ball in his hands. And so here's my question. Like, do you land on something where you're like, Vakari Swain is going to get a strong look at punt returner. And, hey, let's play him a little bit at receiver and a little bit at DB. Like, is that an option? I think we might could see a little bit of that.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those examples of he's so athletic and so gifted in so many ways, it would be a shame to keep him on the sideline just because he's not, you know, didn't win out that, cover corner spot the opposite of Odie Fortune. And I thought it was funny, and maybe this is just him trying to, you know, keep things under wraps, for a little bit longer. But even Beamer seemed surprised when he was out there on that one pass they went out that Kilgore threw to him on one of the trick plays they had earlier on in the game. And again, maybe that's just them not trying to tip their hand too early on any things. But again, he obviously has the wide receiver background, so that's a viable spot that he could slide into as well.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason he has, like, if Steve Spurrier was here, that dude would be a receiver already. No question in my mind whatsoever. But I think they like the upside at corner so much that I think they've been hesitant to make that move because they believe – I mean, he physically looks like some of these NFL guys we've seen roll through here at cornerback. So they don't want to give up on that. Typically, you know, if you're 6'1", 188, I don't know what the average size receiver is in the NFL, but you're not tall if you're 6'1", 188. At cornerback – especially at the college level, if you're 6'1", you're lengthy. Like, you're a guy that teams are going to comment on. You have good size. So I think that's always why you see coaches, when they have these 6'1", 6'2 guys, if they can move their hips, they're like, you could potentially be special at corner, and they don't want to give up on that. But I do think finding a specific role for him, should and will be a big priority. It still appears to be that's cornerback, even though I know some people would love to see it be receiver. But I'm fascinated to see where it goes with Swain, because it just feels like he's made a big step this offseason since last year.
Absolutely.
This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air. The premier HVAC company in the Midlands is growing. Are you a top HVAC technician? AAA Heating and Air is looking for dedicated applicants to fill their fast-growing service department with top-notch HVAC technicians. If you're the best, then they want you. If you're ready to stop working and start a career, you can earn up to $100,000 plus a year at AAA Heating and Air. Quality candidates will have at least 2 years' experience and a good driving record. Benefits include top industry salaries, commission on service and unit sales, set call limits, company-provided take-home vehicle and gas card, company-provided cell phone and tablet, health, dental, and vision benefits, 401k retirement plan with company match, and scaled PTO based on length of service. Contact Roy and Dana Finley at 803-677-1500 or check out their job postings on Facebook or ZipRecruiter.
AAA Air, when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
It's a very busy week here on the game, by the way. The early game is going to be out at the Chamber of Commerce Golf Tournament coming up on Thursday morning from 6 until 9 a.m. So, again, plenty of things going on here. As we get back into our conversation, again, appreciate our guy Mark from the Garnet Trust joining us in that last segment, talking about their newest match campaign with men's and women's basketball. But getting back into our conversation, as we're kind of going position group by position group from the spring game on Saturday night, linebackers were an area that we talked about a lot going into it with the new faces coming in. Obviously, some of the old faces sticking around, like Debo Williams, who you kind of know what to expect with a guy like him. But one guy that I particularly was keeping an eye on Saturday night was Demetrius Knight, transferring in from UNC Charlotte. And he definitely, in my opinion, kind of lived up to that billing of a guy that kind of flies around, can be all over the field at any point in time, can make tackles and, play in effect specifically in the run game as well. And, we saw that out of him on Saturday.
Yeah, he came in as a super athletic guy. That was something that when they went in the portal, we heard a lot about. They wanted to add speed. They wanted to add athleticism. And both he and Bengali Kamara, I thought, looked the part. And, they were out there a lot early on. We saw all the linebackers get some playing time, get some reps, and, I think that's another spot where they've got some depth, they've got some competition, and, I think you go down to the two true freshmen that came in, and, Wendell Gregory probably got more hype as a recruit, but you look at J.R. Johnson out there, looks great physically. He's flying around as well. He actually started as well as a true freshman. So I think in the game Saturday, I mean. So this group is going to be fun to watch. And did y'all catch that Bam Martin Scott, who obviously had a huge finish to last year, was also the spring most improved defensive player, which I don't think we should overlook that.
Yeah, I mean, this group has so much depth, and I think I've said this before on the show, but we knew coming in, based on who South Carolina returned, the fact that you signed a couple of promising young four-star freshmen who probably would be able to factor in. Remember, this is all before spring. And, you know, the guys that you got as transfers, you get just about, yeah, you lost a couple guys to the portal, but you brought in a couple of guys who are very experienced. And so I think we all felt like this would be a group that had a chance to be better, to actually upgrade this offseason. Even then, I was almost a little bit surprised about how strongly the staff has gone in talking up this group. You know, because sometimes coaches are, you know, a little bit more conservative about groups. They've really talked it up and I think not been shy about it. I mean, Shane Beamer the other night at the Welcome Home Tour in Lancaster, he talked that part up about the linebacker group, about how they feel like they've got, I think he said 7 or 8 guys, and really, you look at it, that's not much of a stretch, because you've got your guys back that you return. You've still actually got Mo Cobb out there. If he can come back and give you something this season, that'd be a bonus. But you've got, I mean, J.R. Johnson, you know, freshman the other night, he flashed. Wendell Gregory flashed. Knight, Kamara, Bam Scott, Debo Williams. You've got a bunch of guys back and a bunch of guys that have played a lot of football. And, you know, we were talking about earlier about the, you know, the gaps closing down very quickly in the run game the other night. I mean, credit the linebackers for that, because you would look in the pile and there's a couple linebackers in that pile running to the football.
And I go back to what you were mentioning a moment ago, where Bam Martin Scott was the most improved guy on defense. And I can't remember what week of spring practice it was. I think it was when he talked to the media. But, you know, he was talking about getting work at all those different linebacker spots, so somebody that you can utilize across the entire length of your middle of your defense there. And it seems like a lot of these guys have the ability to do that. So a lot of different combinations and mixing and matching that you can do in the middle of that defense, whether you're running that 4-2-5 or that 3-3-5.
Well, and that's kind of a new thing for Bam. He was like the backup Will linebacker last year, but really only kind of started making his impact when they went to that 3-3-5, because that put that Sam backer on the field. And it's almost kind of like a hybrid these days, nickelback slash Sam linebacker, and he excelled in that. And a lot of people were saying, hey, why have we not seen Bam before? And why have we not seen him on the field more than we've seen? And so I think for him being able to come along this spring and – basically, they slid him over, and they got him on the field. I think it's that Mike spot with Debo still at the wheel in the 4-2-5 look. So my question was, all right, is it going to be similar to last year, and you have either Demetrius Knight or Bengali Kamara kind of step up and take the spot beside Debo in the 4-2-5, or will Bam show he is comfortable and that the staff trusts him to kind of do both? And I think this is a really good sign that the staff is comfortable with him doing both, which would mean you have probably your two best linebackers on the field, no matter what your package is, whether it's 4-2-5 or 3-3-5. I think right now in that 4-2-5, it's probably Debo and Bam Martin Scott. I think when they go to three linebackers, my guess would be it would be those two plus Demetrius Knight kind of playing Mike, with Bam out there at the Sam spot, and then the rest of your guys kind of fill in behind them from there.
Yeah, and, you know, a guy that I feel like I didn't just mention and that has gotten a little bit lost, like Jaren Willis. I mean, he's still, you know, you can kind of go through this list of guys, and you really do, you know, mentioning 7 and 8 guys. Sometimes if you do that, you're like, all right, you know, this dude's just going through the whole roster. But you can really see, you know, those body types are good on special teams as well. And so, you know, you can certainly envision a world in which all those guys factor in somewhat in these different packages. You know, you've got the 3-3-5, the 4-2-5, like you were talking about, Wes. You've got that distinction. You've got special teams. And you could rotate guys. We all remember the years where South Carolina had 3 guys at linebacker. Sometimes, you know, there's a year they lost one of them. You know, so you're basically playing 2 guys every snap of every game. Your snap counts are running up. you have the ability to mix and match and, you know, be able to substitute guys too.
And you mentioned Jaron Willis there, and he's somebody that obviously transferred over from Ole Miss a while back. And the way that I understood it at that point in time is he was somebody that was going to need some time to develop to kind of get up to where they wanted him to be. And I don't think that's something we're going to have a full grasp of until we actually get into the season and see him, if he gets rotated in, playing that linebacker spot.
Yeah, and not to be a broken record on J.R. Johnson, but I think Jaron Willis' biggest hurdle in terms of teammates is going to be, can he fend off J.R. Johnson? Because you're talking about a similar guy in terms of athleticism, in terms of being someone who can run sideline to sideline, but also has the length to go get the passer. I think Beamer mentioned some of this was just the way the teams were split and you were getting later in the game, but it looked like they had a package where they had J.R. Johnson and Wendell Gregory basically playing edge at the end of the game. And, you know, I think that was more of a spring game thing, but that just shows you what they think of him in terms of that ability to go get the passer. I was trying to figure out who J.R. Johnson looked like out there physically, and it hit me.
Oh, let's hear it. I like this.
So, y'all know there's a certain safety on this team that we've toyed with. Could he play linebacker ever since he arrived? And I was like, you know what? He looks like Nick E out there running around.
That's a good comp. I like that.
And then sometimes I struggle with the size from a distance, and I said, are they look to me to be about the same size. And sure enough, J.R. Johnson listed at 6'4", Nick E listed at 6'3". Both of them listed at 218 pounds on the dot. So,
wow.
J.R. Johnson is the linebacker version of Nick E. Nick E probably going to beat him in a foot race, but just the length, the smooth operator kind of ability to move in space, I'm feeling good about that one.
By the way, you mentioned Nicky, and he's somebody that we know what we have in him. We haven't really focused on him a whole lot this spring. Had a performance on Saturday night, was able to knock away that pass in the end zone that I think that was Freddie Hunt that maybe they're throwing to, or was it Josh Simon?
Simon.
I think it was Josh Simon.
Simon from Sellers.
Yeah, Simon to Sellers that Nicky Emanuori is able to get in there and have a deflection. Again, he's a guy that we kind of know what to expect with him, so we haven't focused on him a lot this spring, but he's somebody that's also obviously going to play a big role in that secondary when the fall rolls around.
Yeah, and I think a guy who you're hoping he can build off that final half, a little bit of a slow start, great final half of last year. You want him to build off that, keep it going, be a veteran in that secondary. Another guy in the same category, DQ Smith. I mean, he was, defensive player of the spring, I think, for defense and special teams, I think, if I remember correctly. So he quietly, and that goes back to just if a guy is returning, we're not focused on them as much, but he quietly apparently had a fantastic spring. So I think that's a really good sign for him. And it seems like they would love to keep both those guys locked in, playing true safety, as opposed to having to move one of them down and play nickel and do all that different stuff, which is kind of what Jalen Kilgore coming on at nickel last year allowed them to do with both DQ and Nicky.
Speaking of the secondary, more good news from a recruiting standpoint coming away from the weekend in reference to the 2025 class, and more getting added to this defense.
This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air. The premier HVAC company in the Midlands is growing. Are you a top HVAC technician? AAA Heating and Air is looking for dedicated applicants to fill their fast-growing service department with top-notch HVAC technicians. If you're the best, then they want you. If you're ready to stop working and start a career, you can earn up to $100,000 plus a year at AAA Heating and Air. Quality candidates will have at least 2 years experience and a good driving record. Benefits include top industry salaries, commission on service and unit sales, set call limits, company-provided take-home vehicle and gas card, company-provided cell phone and tablet, health, dental, and vision benefits, 401k retirement plan with company match, and scaled PTO based on length of service. Contact Roy and Dana Finley at 803-677-1500 or check out their job postings on Facebook or ZipRecruiter.
AAA Air, when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
Scott sets up to the right side. They fake it to him. Ashford wants to throw it. Fires a pass complete, falling down to the 27-yard line. There's the talented freshman from Greenville, Mazio Bennett, for a gain of 14 yards and a first down for the Black.
We were just talking in the pregame about spent a lot of time on Mazio Bennett. This is a guy the staff's high on. came in, hit the ground running as a freshman. May not blow you away with his, you know, his physical, the looks, the speed, but just knows how to run routes and get open.
Welcome back in. It is the Extra Point and Gamecock Central Takeover Hour live out of Firehouse Subs at Killian Crossing. Going to be out here until noon. Store opens up in about an hour. Come by and see us. Grab a delicious Firehouse Subs. Get a t-shirt. Get a koozie as well. That was the call on Saturday night. Our guy, Chris, right there, giving the thorough.
The two Chris's.
Two Chris's. Chris Miller and Chris Clark giving thorough insight into Mazio Bennett's reception for Robbie Ashford there. Kind of a falling down catch as Ashford kind of threw it a little bit out of his reach, was able to make the adjustment and get the catch there. And Mazio Bennett is somebody that we obviously had a lot of eyes on going into this game. Everything that we heard about him going through spring practice, obviously he's making strides very, very quickly. And we think he's somebody that could contribute on this offense this fall. And from the few glimpses that we saw on Saturday night, looked pretty good.
Yeah, he had a solid day, I thought, had the catch there, and, you know, continued competition at wide receiver. And, you know, I thought it was kind of interesting for me. You're always looking for, all right, who have we not talked about enough when it comes to the a particular position group? And I found myself, guys, trying to decipher, all right, is this a spring game thing? Because you don't want to put too much into a spring game. Or have we been not talking about someone enough? We've talked about Mazio a ton. Tyshawn Russell had a really good day on Saturday. Had the nice little catch toward the sideline where he made a guy or two miss. He had another catch that was wiped out because they called, like, the touch sack or whatever. But the play had already happened, and he made a good catch, looked confident, was catching the football away from his body with his hands, which – I think for a guy who struggled with some drops down the stretch last year was a good sign. And he's someone who we've always heard has the ability. It's just more about consistency, kind of doing all the things that it takes to consistently be a contributor. So I was very, I would say, encouraged by his performance on Saturday.
And I guess we shouldn't necessarily be surprised by that. I know we focused a lot on Nick Harbor because he was the more highly touted prospect coming in, but the fact that Tyshawn Russell and Norris Sellers had the opportunity to gel a little bit last season when they played in some of that mop-up duty, you know, against like Furman and Vanderbilt, I guess it shouldn't surprise us the fact that maybe he's a little bit, I don't want to say farther ahead, but has a little bit more rapport with the Norris Sellers at this point in time, because he did certainly seem to be his favorite target when those two were on the field on Saturday. And again, he still kind of fits that same type of body style and role as a lot of these guys that came in the transfer portal, so could be a little bit more up to speed quicker with the offense, again, that rapport with the Norris Sellers at this point.
Yeah, he's an easy mover, man. Like he's smooth. He's kind of natural. He appears to be a good athlete. That was a late take for South Carolina. A little bit bigger than some of those other guys. Obviously not your Nick Harbor, 6'5", 230 or whatever Harbor is these days. 6 foot 188, and I think it's one of those things where he needs to springboard from the spring game and use that going into the offseason and really just excel during the summer workout program, because they're clearly looking for guys to step up.
Sure.
And that's a position that remains wide open. Obviously, they went into the portal. They got three guys. And, you know, I think they feel good about the progress of those three guys this spring. But at the same time, I do get the sense they're still looking for guys to emerge and just be – Can somebody be that top target? Somebody that number one guy, that number one receiver? And, you know, I'm not sitting here from a spring game saying, hey, it's going to be Tyshawn Russell. But my expectation for what he could be this year certainly bumped up a couple of spots based on what we saw. And I think it'll be good for him if he can just kind of keep building off of that.
Well, and that's the interesting thing about the wide receiver room going into this year is that, you know, going into last year, we obviously thought Juice Wells was going to be that guy. And when he went down, it naturally transitioned over to Xavier Leggett. Now, Leggett exceeded everyone's expectations with the monster year that he had, and he's likely going to be a high pick in the draft a little bit later on this week. But you're kind of almost starting over with a clean slate at the wide receiver room. Well, yes, you're having guys like Carver and Russell return, but they had very limited production last year just because where they ended up on the depth chart. You bring in all these guys from the transfer portal, could bring in another one in the transfer portal with the cycle being open once again if you can find somebody that kind of fits that size. So I'd say everybody's kind of on even footing for the most part going into this spring, trying to figure out who the guys are going to be, and even at this point we don't quite know who those guys are going to be just yet.
Yeah, and they want to bring in a guy at receiver in the portal. They may go get two, I think. So we'll see what that position looks like in the next few months, but I think that's one of those spots. It's always intriguing. And every position is like this to an extent, but you think you know what's going to happen, but you don't ever truly know what guy, when the lights come on and you're playing other opponents, is going to kind of emerge as the guy. You know, Dow Loggins likes to bring it up that, hey, this time last year, nobody knew who Xavier Leggett was. I don't think it was to that extent. We all knew who Leggett was. You know, we obviously, he wasn't reading Gamecock Central 4 years ago when.
Why not?
I mean, I was going to say he was in Arkansas. I don't think he was there yet. He was in the NFL somewhere.
Yeah.
But, you know, that guy always had the physical traits. We talked about it from the moment he arrived as a true freshman. It was a matter of putting it all together. And to Loggins' point, we all know there was that huge jump, you know, going into last year. So is there anybody that's going to make a Leggett-sized jump this year? Probably not fair. I mean, number two in receiving yards in school history for a season for Leggett, behind only Alshon Jeffrey this past season. So that's not fair. But is it – I mean, go back to Josh Van when he had his breakout year as a junior. With Josh Van, everybody's like, man, that'd be cool if Josh could, like, sort of translate it to the game field and have a big year. Nobody was necessarily predicting that to definitely happen. Maybe they were, but not with conviction. And then, you know, with Juice Wells the next year, when Juice emerged, everybody's like, man, this guy looks like he might be the best receiver on the team. But we didn't know what exactly that would mean in games. Leggett had a great offseason. They tried to tell us, but I was like, is this offseason talk or is this real? It was real. So I think it's to be determined. Like, if you said, all right, let's, for a thought exercise, predict the three leading receivers on this team and how many catches they have going into next year, that would be very difficult to do at this point, I think.
Well, and you've also got, like, it's triggered something in my mind. You're talking about Josh Van. I mean, he did have a really good year, which was great, but – and that was his second to last year, mm-hmm. You know? The offense wasn't very good that year. The following season, you added more pieces, and so he was he still had a solid performance, but you were able to add more. And so I think we should look at it more of what pieces does the offense as a whole have, you know? Yeah, you'll end up having a leading receiver, but what does that look like? Is that a guy that has 60 catches, or do you have a few guys that have, like, 30 catches? We've seen both versions at South Carolina. And we've actually seen both versions where there have been pretty good offenses, or we've seen both versions where the offense hasn't been very good. You know, I think it's fair to expect this might be a more run-heavy offense this year. So, you know, maybe the total number of receptions, or maybe that lead guy doesn't have as many. But it's still very much a question. You know, is it more of a by-committee approach? Shane Beamer said that. Could the transfer portal acquisition or two change that? That's possible as well. Still a lot of questions to be answered about this group.
I think at this point, we'd all be shocked if it's not a little bit more of a run-based mm-hmm. offense. But,
yeah.
I mean, Loggins sat there at Pro Day and told us, he's like, this will be a different offense this year.
Sure.
And then he
sure.
mentions Attaway and Rocket Sanders, who I think were the only two players he brought up without being prompted on them.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, we saw Lenore Sellers' arm strength on display at times last year. So if you need to lean towards a little bit more of the pass game as well, you certainly have a quarterback that's capable. But obviously the skill set of him, you know, and his ability to run, as well as Robbie Ashford, whoever ends up winning the job, obviously is going to be a big part of this offense as well.
Yeah, and how many, just from a statistical standpoint, how much of the yardage will be based on a running game, but just because, hey, a pass was called here, but then Seller sees an opening and takes off running. So it's not even always based on how you call it. Sometimes it's just the way it plays out. And so I do think there's going to be more opportunities, obviously, for the quarterback to create something with his legs. And I think we'll see Sellers excel in that role just like he did on Saturday.
Plenty more to break down from Saturday night's spring game. And again, set to be joined by Monkel Goodwine, transfer. Nope. I don't know.
Monkel just got called into a meeting.
Okay. Well, that is a lot.
Not the principal's office.
No, okay. Okay.
He did not get called in the principal's office, but there was a meeting for his position group that was called about 10 minutes ago.
Okay.
So that obviously takes priority that, over
so,
our
we certainly understand.
So Monkel is he's dedicated to his craft.
He is dedicated to his craft, but I hear there's a chance he may join us later this week for the Garnet Trust Hour.
Okay.
Thursday.
Well, that's we certainly understand. Yeah. So all good there. We will continue breaking down what happened on Saturday night's spring game real quick. I want to remind you, as always, about the Palmetto Citizens Federal Credit Union Grand Slam giveaway. Still waiting on that first Grand Slam from Gamecock. Hit a couple opportunities missed this past weekend, taking on the Arkansas Razorbacks. The pot is at $1,000. Head online to 1075game.com. Register for your chance to win as head in the series against Kentucky this weekend. Going to be broadcasting live at Firehouse Subs on Killian Road at Killian Crossing. Going until noon here on the game.
This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air. The premier HVAC company in the Midlands is growing. Are you a top HVAC technician? AAA Heating and Air is looking for dedicated applicants to fill their fast-growing service department with top-notch HVAC technicians. If you're the best, then they want you. If you're ready to stop working and start a career, you can earn up to $100,000 plus a year at AAA Heating and Air. Quality candidates will have at least 2 years experience and a good driving record. Benefits include top industry salaries, commission on service and unit sales, set call limits, company provided take home vehicle and gas card, company provided cell phone and tablet, health, dental and vision benefits, 401k retirement plan with company match, and scaled PTO based on length of service.
Contact Roy and Dana Finley at 803-677-1500 or check out their job postings on Facebook or ZipRecruiter.
AAA Air when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
Welcome back in. Tyler Head, Wes Mitchell, Chris Clark, broadcasting live out at Firehouse Subs at Killian Crossing. Again, going until noon. Store opens up right in an hour. Let's come by and see us. Got t-shirts to give away, got koozies. Our guy Josh just showed up. We got tickets to this weekend's matchup between South Carolina and Kentucky. In baseball, got some Firefly tickets to give away as well, so by all means, come by, see us, get some free stuff, as well as enjoy a delicious Firehouse sub, too. It is time for our TEC Equipment Rentals, who did the heavy lifting. And I'd set this up because I did think we're going to be joined by our guy, Monkwell, but regardless, we're still going to give him the award because I think that he did quite the bit of heavy lifting on Saturday. His official stats end with only one sack. But if you would ask him, he'd probably say he probably had about seven or eight because those defensive linemen were begging Beamer to be a little bit more quick with that whistle on Saturday because they were getting to the quarterbacks pretty quickly, and I imagine he would have a few more sacks if we asked him his opinion on
it. You were going to give him the award in person.
I was going to give him the award in person. We can still give it to him later in the week, but this is a Tuesday segment sponsored by our friends over at TEC Equipment Rental, so I thought it would be a natural transition. But regardless, he still gets the award.
Yeah, we'll accept
behalf. What's the name of his award?
It is the TEC Equipment Rentals, who did the heavy lifting. So somebody that their stats may not jump off the page at you, but still did a serviceable job on Saturday night.
I want to make a trophy for it. Can we do that? Josh,
can do that.
Josh, that's Josh's job.
Yeah,
I thought Tyler had a plaque for
it. You know what? we can get our guys Jason and Rusty over at TEC Equipment Rentals on Old Dunbar Road in West Columbia to help us out with the design of the trophy. How about that?
And they can – hey, make it theirs. You know, make it your own. Take
by the
ownership
way,
of it.
If you've ever wanted to go up on one of those gigantic lift things that takes you like 50 feet in the air, they got you covered.
Actually, I don't. I'm afraid of heights. But, I mean, it sounds cool. We'll put Wes up in it. He's not afraid. He's more of a daredevil than I am.
We'll not put him my old age, Chris.
I like your pick of Monkel.
Yeah.
I mean,
and the defensive line as a whole looked. And the edge spot looked really, really good on Saturday night. Now, again, that is maybe a little bit of a detriment to what people think of the offensive line. But, again, for a group that last year had its ups and downs, defensive line is one area you felt good coming away from Saturday night.
Well, let me say this about – I want to get your take on this as I wag my finger. So, something that I noticed during the game was that even when there was space, you know, they tried to run the outside zone some. They would go off tackle, or there'd be some type of play where there was a little bit of space. Man, it got closed a few different times in a hurry. You're like, okay, here finally comes a run. Mm-hmm. Like, this run is going to pop out for, you know, 5 yards. We'll see. Closed up. And that, to me, speaks a little bit to the increased team speed up front.
Yeah, you in your analysis, one thing you kept mentioning was that you know, they're trying to run this outside zone or stretch play or whatever it was. And, you know, I think some of that is team speed, athleticism. I think some of that is guys being in the right spot and not over-pursuing plays either. And I thought the running backs were doing what they could. Like, they were trying to be patient, and they were trying to let things kind of develop. And those guys just pursued the football very, very well across the board in that group, man. So I think again, we saw everything sort of play out the way we had been told it had been behind closed doors. And when I was finally doing my sort of final observations on the game, I found myself struggling to figure out which guys to highlight up front, because it was just – it was a complete effort. Like, all the guys, you know, Boogie's been here for a while now at this point, but Boogie had a very disruptive day. So you obviously want to, you are inclined to talk a little bit more about the newer guys, just because I think fans get excited about hearing about the newer guys, and you're still setting expectations for newer guys, right? But just across the board, I mean, I think this group, from what we've heard, I think they have bought into the idea of, hey, you can go out there, you can go full blast while you're on the field, because you don't have to hold anything back. And what I mean by that is you are going to be rotated in and out. You don't have to sit there and it deep in the back of your mind say, man, I got to hold something back for the fourth quarter here because I'm going to be playing 70 snaps on the D-line. I think edge and interior D-line, you feel like you're going to be able to rotate guys in and have very little drop-off.
Well, and I think it's interesting to look at what they addressed with that position group in the transfer portal, because, again, you have a lot of guys with experience already coming back. Then you go out there and get a guy in DeAndre Jules who could be, you know, going to the NFL draft later on this week if you wanted to, besides come here to South Carolina. And then Goodwine, who, again, hasn't played a lot in his time at Alabama, was obviously a very highly touted recruit, four-star, that you go to Alabama, you must be pretty good for the most part, and has obviously, you know, shown that through practices in the spring game so far. So you have kind of two ends of the spectrum there, but two guys that are going to be able to come in and contribute and, again, just work that rotation of having a lot of bodies in the middle of that defensive line that you're going to need when you're going up against the likes of Ole Miss and Alabama and LSU and teams like that as you go through the grind of this season.
Well, you look at that group, what may be the most talented interior lineman on the team, he had to come out after play one in TJ Sanders. Mm-hmm. So they were doing that without TJ out there running around. And Dylan Stewart, that's his first major, I guess you call it major action. That was the biggest stage he had been on as far as his college career. And so he's only going to get better. And then I forgot about this until I was going through the roster. JT Gear, who is someone that they think is going to potentially help, he was out hurt. So Elijah Davis wasn't out there. So, I mean, you've got – it goes even a little bit deeper than what we saw on Saturday. Of course, is there also, to be fair, like Tyler said, what does that mean about the O-line? What does that mean about the guys that were out there? That's a fair conversation, because it is difficult – when you're looking at a spring game or really any scrimmage setting, to be honest, it is difficult to decipher. Is this poor play on one side? Is this great play on the other? It's almost always a combination. Chris, in some ways, it's just like week to week, matchup to matchup. Mm-hmm. You could be made to look bad one week because you're playing up against a great player, and you could look great the next week because you're playing against the guy you're a little bit better than.
I think from what we've seen and heard, you know, throughout the spring, not just the spring game, you know, and we talked about this earlier this week, I think yesterday, I'm more convicted that the front seven is just improved and probably markedly so than being convicted one way or the other about the offensive line. I mean, I'm certainly open to both ideas. I'm open that the offensive line is going to – I think they will be better, but, like, will they take, you know, some significant step? I'm also open to the fact that – maybe they're not significantly better than last season. I don't know yet, but I am convicted that the front seven is going to be a lot better, and I think there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, you got some proven players, whether they've done it here at South Carolina in some form or fashion, or some guys that you've brought into that mix as transfers that have done it at other places that can translate. And then what I mentioned, the maybe the small thing that I mentioned at the beginning of the segment, that even when there was open space, it just closed up so fast. And that's not man-on-man blocking. That's just here's a little bit of space, and boom, it closes up. Whereas in the past, we didn't see that as much. And, man, you just look at this front seven, like all the guys you just mentioned, Wes, plus you start getting into the linebackers, it is absolutely loaded with fourth-year players, fifth-year players, some sixth-year guys, even guys who aren't going to be the primary guys or even in the two deep necessarily. You look over and they're seniors or they're redshirt juniors or they're redshirt seniors, fifth-year, sixth-year guys. And so there's just so much experience, and that counts for something, I think, in the game of football.
I think when you look at it come away from Saturday night, it's kind of one of those things where, you know, you can be on one end and say the defensive line's great, the offensive line's terrible, or say the reason the defensive line's so good is because the offensive line's so terrible, and the reason the offensive line is so terrible is because the defensive line is so good. I think the truth kind of lies somewhere in between. And, again, we talked about it coming away yesterday that, you know, you had the teams kind of split up as far as the offensive line goes, so you didn't have that one unit that you expect to be the ones all working together, which again contributes a lot to why maybe they weren't quite as in sync as you want them to be, and still trying to figure out who exactly those five guys are going to be. We'll continue to break all this down. Want to touch on a little bit of recruiting coming up next, because it was a big recruiting weekend for the Gamecocks on a lot of fronts. Real quick, though, I want to remind you about the craft beer card. It is back. Head online to 1075game.com and click on the Sweet Deals tab to purchase the craft beer card. You can spend $30 a brewery at 12 different craft beer locations, a $360 value. All yours for just $79. And again, go online to 1075game.com and click on Sweet Deals to purchase the craft beer card. Let's talk recruiting coming up next. Wrap up hour number one with broadcasting live out at Firehouse Subs at Killian Crossing, going until noon here on The Game.
This podcast of the Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs, is sponsored by AAA Heating and Air. The premier HVAC company in the Midlands is growing. Are you a top HVAC technician? AAA Heating and Air is looking for dedicated applicants to fill their fast-growing service department with top-notch HVAC technicians. If you're the best, then they want you. If you're ready to stop working and start a career, you can earn up to $100,000 plus a year at AAA Heating and Air. Quality candidates will have at least 2 years' experience and a good driving record. Benefits include top industry salaries, commission on service and unit sales, set call limits, company-provided take-home vehicle and gas card, company-provided cell phone and tablet, health, dental, and vision benefits, 401k retirement plan with company match, and scaled PTO based on length of service. Contact Roy and Dana Finley at 803-677-1500 or check out their job postings on Facebook or ZipRecruiter.
AAA Air, when you need us, AAA Heating and Air.
And X Point Gamecock. Welcome back in. X Point Gamecock Central Takeover Hour, presented by Firehouse Subs. Live out at Firehouse Subs, Killian Crossing. Going to be out here until noon. Tyler Head, Westminster, Chris Clark, our guy Josh out here. We've got tickets to give away, got t-shirts, got koozies, the whole nine yards. Come by and see us. Store opens up at 10:30. Come enjoy a delicious Firehouse Sub as well. Continuing to break down everything that happened over the weekend with spring game, we'll focus on some stuff off the field for a minute here. As always, the spring game is a big weekend for recruiting, and South Carolina walked away with a couple of big commitments after the weekend. One of them, a name you might be familiar with, but don't get it confused, it's not the one that's being drafted by the Bears later on this week. Caleb Williams committing to the Gamecocks, defensive lineman out of the state of Virginia.
Yeah, that is a really nice pickup, I think, Tyler, for the Gamecocks. You know, defensive tackle is actually going to be, I think this has gone a little bit under discussed is probably the right word.
Sure.
I think Gamecock fans that pay close attention to roster management and recruiting are aware of this, but, you know, we were just talking last segment about how senior-laden this defensive tackle group is. Great for this year. Then you look at 2025 and you go, woo, there's some work to be done here, right? Because you're going to have a lot of guys that leave, whether it's for, you know, like T.J. Sanders would have another year, but, man, with what the year we expect him to have,
sure,
he's already a redshirt junior. Like, it's probably going to make sense for him to move on. Then you've got Boogie, you've got Tonka, you got DeAndre Jules, et cetera, et cetera. Got a lot of upperclassmen. And so it's going to be really important for them this year to go, you know, attack the high school ranks, but also to get some more immediate help, I think, JUCO level, portal. You know, portal's going to be, I think, a heavy, you know, position for defensive tackle, but you also want developmental guys, and I think that's what you get in Caleb Williams. Very intriguing prospect, because You look at him, he's 6'6", about 250. Probably, you know, really doesn't even look 250 now. Has room to put on plenty of weight to the frame, I think. The film, if you haven't seen it, it's a little bit hard to watch. Kind of far away, kind of grainy. But you can see, like, there's a lot of production. 95 tackles here. I think he had about 24, 25 tackles for loss. And a kid that can really move. Recruited by some schools as an offensive lineman. So, just very athletic prospect with a lot of upside.
You said on our podcast the film was hard to watch, and I was like, does he mean because it's just bad, or?
That's the right phrase.
That's not the best way to describe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that was bad.
The film itself.
The actual process of watching it is hard to see.
It looks like that 2001 film that was sent on a DVD.
Shout out Athlete Vault. So you cite some of the Athlete Vault film.
The person that's got the camcorder on the very top of like the press box that doesn't zoom in all the way, like that kind of film.
It's like you remember the old Alshon Jeffrey film?
Oh,
you're like, man,
gosh.
I think that pixel looks really good on the film.
If that's him, that's great. But
this
I'm
guy's
not sure.
A stud, I think.
I think. It's like raining and like a mile away.
Yeah.
Filmed on the hill across the
street.
Yeah, but, you know, I think important for South Carolina to break into the high school ranks at that defensive line spot because you know good and well that they're sitting there as they look ahead at their kind of I would say like that big board where you're kind of looking at, all right, here's who we project to lose after this season when they leave. And I got to imagine that position is circled. And the good thing, say what you want about transfer portal, NIL, today's college football landscape, the good thing from a school or team standpoint is that you can fill in the gaps at a position relatively quickly. I remember when South Carolina would have unbalanced classes at times, and it would be like, we're going to take 7 high school defensive linemen just so we hope 2 of them are ready. And, you know, then we're going to go JUCO searching and, you know, that can be difficult in those evaluations as well. So I think for today's landscape, you can be like, all right, we're taking 2 high school guys. We're going to go take a senior portal guy who can come in and play right away. Goodwine maybe can use this year to get acclimated and come back. And then maybe add in a sophomore or junior transfer to balance it out. And in a perfect world, we'll be talking about the D-line room this time next year the way we talked about running back this past cycle, and that you just kind of stacked guys with different eligibilities that were left, in my opinion. So can they do that? We'll see what those players look like. But I think that's probably the direction they'll go moving forward. But Caleb Williams, I think, certainly a good start for that and a great football name on top of that.
I was going to say, it's easy to get him confused with the guy that's going to be drafted later on this week, but different guy. I guess that's kind of a common name when you really think about it. But
I fiddled in my head with making a dad joke about the film that this guy looks great throwing the football, but I couldn't get it to work.
Well, Chris is the resident dad around here. We'll leave dad jokes.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that one.
Yeah. I know.
That's one of a couple commitments South Carolina got from this weekend. We'll dive into more of those as the show goes along. And obviously the spring game is an opportunity to get a lot of recruits on campus as well and guys that you have your eyes on a little bit down the line. From all indications, it seemed like overall it was a very good recruiting weekend from that standpoint too.
Yeah, and the guys they had in, I mean, blue chipper after blue chipper. And we can dive into some of those guys. Gamecocks with momentum with some 5-stars, so we'll talk about that later on the show, I'm sure.
Absolutely. We'll get back into talking about some position-specific stuff. We talked running backs a second ago. We'll dive into that a little bit more.
All right, welcome back in. We are live. Firehouse Subs out here at Killian Road. We got about 40 minutes left out here, so come on by. And even if you miss us, come get a great sub for lunch. We're going out now. We're joined by our friend Jack Veltri from GamecockCentral.com. Gamecock Central beat writer across pretty much all the sports, but right now we're focusing on baseball. We haven't talked much baseball today. Jack, how we doing, man? And I guess, first of all, give us some broad thoughts on the South Carolina-Arkansas series this past weekend.
Yeah, first off, thank you guys for having me on, as always. Always appreciate it. This weekend wasn't – it ultimately wasn't what you wanted, right? You dropped 2 out of 3 this weekend against a really good Arkansas team. And look, there's a lot of different thoughts you could have. But I think the main thing is, well, look, it was, you can look at the numbers and just see that South Carolina didn't do enough to win this weekend. However, I think they did play very well and competitively against a solid team. And I think that's kind of a step in the right direction. I mean, they could have looked lifeless out there and got beaten around and stuff, but they did. They kept it really close the entire weekend. I think they're just a swing or two, or, you know, I'm trying to think, like just something away from being in that position where they're going to go out there and win these types of series. I feel like they're definitely close, like Mark Kingston was saying the other day.
Yeah, you know what, Jack, that's something the fans don't really want to hear. Hey, we're close, and we've reached the point, I feel like, where regardless of what Kingston says in a press conference, if they lost a game or series, fans don't want to hear it. But we still need to discuss it. And so I obviously the spring game is going on. I got to watch game one and game two of the series, so game one of the doubleheader on Saturday. I didn't get to see hardly any of the second game on Saturday. How much of what happened, I mean, you're talking about an elite Arkansas team. They're a top five team for a reason. And how much of this weekend was that South Carolina pretty much ran out of pitching in game three and having to play that doubleheader, because they frankly competed against a, you know, they've been the number one team. They're number two right now, I guess, is Arkansas. They competed, I thought, in a really close way, game one and game two, and split those first two. But it just felt like, just watching the box score, that maybe they ran out of pitching in that game three.
No, yeah, they totally did run out of pitching by that point in game three. I mean, games one and two, I think you really couldn't have gotten better outings from all your pitchers. I think you are – I think after this weekend, I think you've kind of learned, okay, who your three guys are going to be in the starting rotation heading into this upcoming weekend against another good team in Kentucky. I think you're probably going to be seeing Roman Kimball, Eli Jones, and Dylan Eskew all again, probably the rotation. That would not surprise me. And then after that, I mean, I think the bullpen did their job. It's just when you come to Sunday, and I'm sorry, Saturday in that doubleheader, and you've already used most of your big guns, like Garrett Gainey and Chris Veach were going to be unavailable. So you had to start Dylan Eskew. He pitched excellently. And then after that, I mean, you had to throw Tyler Pitzer and Parker Marla, and then some of the other guys that you haven't used much this year, like Michael Polk and, you know, Troy Quinn. So that should kind of really tell you how depleted the bullpen was by this point in the weekend. It's tough because South Carolina really needed to win that second game of the doubleheader. But, again, it's not really just the pitching's fault. You know, the defense wasn't particularly great in the early going of that game, and it really did set them back. And, it's a problem, but I think overall you have to be happy with how the pitching did this weekend.
Jack, since you mentioned Eskew, you know, Mark Kingston seemed very pleased with his performance. Obviously, he put together probably his best performance of the year pretty easily. What did you see from him in that performance makes you think, hey, he might can be able to carry this forward? Maybe he's kind of turned a corner early here.
So this season for him has kind of been a little weird, right? Because he's pitched in just about every single spot. He's been, you know, he started up here in the weekend rotation. Then he moved to the bullpen. Then he got a midweek start. Now he's, you know, back into the rotation for right now at least. The big issue with him has always been, and I think we've talked about it before, guys, is that when he goes to the line for the second time through, it just seems like these, you know, opposing offenses are able to really figure him out. But for some reason, you know, on Saturday night, he just looked like a completely different pitcher. He looked more poised. He looked a lot more comfortable out there. And, yeah, I mean, he definitely, you know, had a little bit of issue with walks in some innings there. But for the most part, he was throwing strikes. His command looked sharp. And he really was able to pitch, I think, the way he wanted to. And that's something we really haven't seen from him this year. I mean, we saw it in, you know, scrimmages before the season started of what he could really do. I thought he looked sharp there, but, you know, since then it's kind of been a mixed bag, and we've seen some good stuff, but nothing great. And I think this past Saturday was the first real highlight of what Eskew can be for this rotation that desperately needs a 2 and 3 in the rotation.
Again, we're joined by Jack Veltri, Gamecock Central beat writer. Jack, we've kind of, as the season has progressed, seen some of the depth of this South Carolina transfer class kind of be on display. We saw that this weekend. Tell us a little bit more about Austin Brindling. He's a guy who came in, was very, very good at getting on base at North Florida, was a little bit, I guess, just kind of buried on the depth chart for much of this year. He gets his first couple of starts as a South Carolina player, and I thought really responded, set the table well. I was texting you, he's got to work on getting picked off at first base. I'm sure that was a discussion in the dugout this weekend. But, I mean, 4-for-10, a double, 2 runs scored, 2 RBIs, 3 walks. I mean, that's a pretty good weekend for any guy, for anybody, much less somebody who's stepping in to a starter's role for the first time.
Yeah, his journey has definitely been an interesting one, right? Because you can go all the way back to 2020 where he walked on at Florida and, you know, had potential to be playing there for the Gators, and then COVID-19 happens. That derails any chance of him ever playing for the Gators. And then, you know, he has to go down the JUCO route. And then he gets an opportunity at North Florida and does well. And then he's the first guy to commit to South Carolina in the transfer portal class that they currently have right now. And, yeah, I mean, I thought at the beginning of the year maybe he would play. He has the stuff to do it. I mean, he's a guy that gets on base. He is quick. He has a good glove in the outfield. He's kind of everything you would want in a contact hitter, basically. A guy that's not going to have a ton of power, but he'll do the other things to get the job done. But because of how many outfielders this team has, I mean, Dylan Brewer has been the primary starter the entire year. And he's been playing pretty well, but SEC play hasn't been that good. And so that's given an opportunity to a guy like Brindling, who, Mark Kingston was saying he wants another contact bat in the lineup. And that's kind of what Austin does. I think he really has a different dynamic that this entire offense needs. And I think, it's a little early to say it, but I think he honestly is what they need at the top of the order. I mean, Cole Messina does his job as a leadoff hitter when he's gotten the opportunity, but Brindling can get on base, he can steal a few bags. I mean, yeah, he got picked off twice this weekend, Wes, but I think that's something that is just, in the moment, first start, kind of jitters, that sort of thing. I think he's going to be a lot more comfortable this weekend, presuming he hits leadoff again, like I think he should be. And, yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to expect from him, but he really did, I think, surpass a lot of people's expectations this weekend. Had played great all weekend, and, you have to tip your hat to him. He did really well.
Jack, couple more minutes here, and Wes has the RPI pulled up for college baseball, and it's even – crazier than I thought, right? Because I mean, you just every team that South Carolina has played is like in the top 10, and then you even have some outliers of Georgia's right outside, Alabama's in there, Ole Miss is like 24, and you've got some teams that you've played, and you've got some teams that you still haven't played. Tennessee being number 6 in the RPI, you got a series against them, Kentucky being number 3, you play them this weekend. Mark Kingston talked about this. They're 9-9 in conference play, so they're 500, and they are close, right? Because they have 5 1-run losses against SEC teams and Clemson combined. And if those go the other way, this is probably a different outlook. But they didn't, right? And they've won some close games as well. What does this team have to do to turn that around, even against a bear of a schedule, to get on the right side of that and capture a few series, including this weekend?
Yeah, look, I mean, anything that Mark Kingston says at this point is just, for most fans, is just gibberish. It's, I agree. Look, I think they are close, like we were talking about before. But obviously no one wants to hear that when you're losing series after series. And, I mean, look, the schedule's brutal. There's no doubt about it. And I do think there is some validity to what Kingston said about had they had an easier schedule, like some teams maybe in college baseball, maybe they'd be, that 31-8 record right now, top 10 in the country, all this and that. But right now, South Carolina's really going through it, and it doesn't get easy because you do have to go play, a big series against Kentucky, a series in Knoxville to end the year. But I think they're still in a good position because, believe it or not, I think the latest news was that I think they're the number 15 overall seed in the NCAA tournament, which would mean they'd be hosting a regional in Columbia as we speak. And I mean, as crazy as that sounds, I mean, look, they're not a bad baseball team. I mean, yeah, they're 9-9 in league play, but this is the toughest conference in college baseball, in my opinion. And for South Carolina, these next few weeks, I think you have to probably win 3 of the next 4 series, in my opinion. However you do it, I think I think you need to at least take one of the series against Kentucky or Tennessee. That would really help solidify your chances moving forward. And then you got to be able to take a series at Missouri and then home versus Georgia. And, I mean, you also have 2 more midweek games. So there are a lot of opportunities for this team to finish strong down the stretch and really cement their status as they look to not only get back to the NCAA tournament, but be one of those hosting seeds, which really becomes critical around this time of year.
Jack, obviously big series coming up with Kentucky. Maybe we can borrow you later this week again, man. We can actually go in-depth on that. But appreciate the time today, man, and hopefully we can talk to you then, okay?
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Thank you guys for having me on, as always.
Yep, that's Jack Veltri. Go check out his work on GamecockCentral.com. When we come back, we're going to dive back into recruiting. He's Chris Clark. I'm Wes Mitchell. We're live out here, Killian Road, Firehouse Subs. We'll be right back.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.